We're now beginning the 8th chapter of Judges. And in this 8th chapter, we have a continuing account now of the victory that Gideon and his men had over the Midianites who had invaded their country. In the previous chapter, we're told how Gideon and 300 men routed and defeated this Midianite and Amalekite army. We're told how they deceived them into slaying themselves. The men of Ephraim were told to go over to the Jordan River and cut them off there as they tried to ford back over to the other side, which they did, and they captured two of their princes, Zeb and Oreb, and they put them to death. Gideon and his 300 soldiers have had a good victory here, although they did not completely annihilate all of the Midianites. We'll learn a little later that they did bring about the death of 120,000 soldiers, which is a very formidable number for this 300 men to conquer. They did it by following what God wanted them to do, by having the earthen vessels broken and the light to shine, and blowing on the trumpets. And these are certainly not the weapons that man would pick to bring about a victory like this, nor would this small number of men be the number of men that man would choose to fight a battle like this. Now, as we begin the 8th chapter, we see that the men of Ephraim had a complaint against Gideon. As we remember from the previous chapter, Gideon's army originally had 32,000 men. God told him this was too many. And so they sent the weak and faint-hearted away, which is 22,000 gone. And then they had them going to drink from the water a certain way. And those who drank by lapping out of their hands were the ones chosen to remain in the army, and they were only 300 men. So he had vastly cut the army down from 32,000 to 300 men at God's bidding. And now the men of Ephraim, who weren't even called to come and fight in this battle, are chiding Gideon about it. Remember, Ephraim is a brother to Manasseh, the tribe from which Gideon was, and so there was a rivalry between these two, between Ephraim and Manasseh. So the men of Ephraim said unto him, "Why hast thou served us thus, that thou called us not when thou wentest to fight with the Midianites?" So here they were saying, "Why didn't you call us to come help? Why have you done us like this? Why have you chosen to fight without us?" Now there are a lot of ways that Gideon could have answered this question. He could have told them, "Well, 22,000 were so weak and faint-hearted that they quit whenever given the opportunity to. These Midianites have been here for 7 years and you haven't raised one hand against them. Why should I think that you want to fight now?" There's all kinds of sharp answers he could have given back, and he would have had justification to have said what he did because it would have been within the truth. And these Ephraimites even went further, and they did chide with him sharply. Now, they really were putting Gideon down here. They chided with him sharply. No telling what all they did accuse him of and leaving them out of this. And this is the case many times when one group is at a rival point with another, even though there is no ill intended whatsoever, one can interpret the actions of another in such a way that they really think they've been abused or mistreated in some way, and they get really deeply offended at it. And so they were offended with Gideon, and they did chide with him sharply. Now here's a case where the wisdom of Gideon came into play. As we said, Gideon could have answered them back very sharply. He could have really cut them down with some facts and statistics about their accomplishments here. But rather than do that, he gave them a soft answer. He played the thing down, and he kept the unity and the friendship of his fellow tribesmen. And so he said unto them, in verse 2, "What have I done now in comparison of you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?" Now, he plays down what he and his 300 men have done. He says, what have we done in comparison to what you've done? Why, the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim, that is the very worst of the crop that Ephraim produces, is better than the vintage of Abiezer. Of course, Abiezer was the family that Gideon was from in Manasseh. And so he says, I'm of such a poor, lowly, humble family that our best is not as good as your worst is. Yeah, you've always outdone us. You've always been better than us. And so he says in verse 3, God had delivered into your hands the princes of Midian, Oreb, and Zeb. And what was I able to do in comparison of you? Well, what did we do compared to what you did? You're the ones who actually captured the kings, the rulers. You're the ones who put to death these great leaders of the Midianites. We weren't able to do near as much as you did. And so Gideon played down his role. When in actuality, if Gideon and his men had not done what they had done, there would have been no way that the Ephraimites would have been in a position to have captured Oreb and Zeb. No way that they could have accomplished what they did. But nevertheless, Gideon plays himself down, and what he had done, he diminishes that so that his brethren then will not be upset. And so the remainder of that verse says, then their anger was abated toward him when he had said that. So you see how wisdom here and how a problem is approached, how an answer is given. Wisdom is used by Gideon so that he averts a time of strife and division among the people when they certainly did not need to have any strife and division. And so this is a lesson to us. We ought to today be willing to play our own accomplishments down. If somebody else has some envy about it, somebody else has some jealousy about it, a bad feeling about it, let's play our accomplishments down and then allow the other person to abate his anger, allow him to cool off a little bit, and not cause an unnecessary division or rift among the brotherhood. So this is a great example here on the part of Gideon for keeping unity among the brethren. And we see that he does a very good job of it. And God saw fit to put this little piece here as an example to us so that we could see how that problems like this ought to be handled. We might mention that this passage is probably not put in the proper position here for the sequence of events, because this had to have happened after Gideon had crossed over Jordan and completely defeated the Midianites and then come back. Then he was confronted with the Ephraimites, because at this particular time he had not yet crossed over Jordan, which we're going to learn in the next verse. So we move into the fourth verse of this eighth chapter of Judges. And Gideon came to Jordan and passed over, he and the 300 men that were with him, faint yet pursuing them. Now, at this time they had routed the Midianites. We learned that 120,000 had been slain, but there were still yet 15,000 men that had not been slain. And they crossed over, gotten by the Ephraimites some way, crossed over Jordan, and were fleeing. Well, Gideon decides he does not want to stop here. He wants to go in and completely annihilate this Midianite force. And he also is going to do it with the 300 men that God has chosen him to have. He doesn't add to the army now. And so they're pursuing this great force of men. At least 15,000 to 300 now. But the men are becoming faint. They have been not only on a long journey, but they've been through the routing and the battle of the Midianites, and they're needing some food, they're needing some refreshment, and so that's the situation that confronts them now as they cross over the Jordan. But they're still pursuing the Midianite force. Verse 5, and he said unto the men of Succoth. Now Succoth is a fair-sized city that's in the tribe of Gad, shortly after they crossed the Jordan River. And so he comes to this city, and he asks the men of the city to give him some help. He says, give, I pray you, loaves of bread unto the people that follow me, for they be faint, and I'm pursuing after Zeba and Zalmunna, kings of Midian. So Gideon lays out the need here. My men and I are faint. We're hungry. We need some sustenance. We're pursuing after these kings of the Midianites, and we are weak and tired, and so we want some loaves of bread. So we just simply ask for some help in the way of some food from these elders of the city of Succoth. This is a very reasonable request. Gideon and his men are doing a very exemplary service to this nation by driving the Midianites out, and he explains exactly what's happening. But we're going to see that the people of Succoth are not hospitable at all. Verse 6, "And the princes of Succoth said, Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna now in thine hand, that we should give bread unto thine army?" They're saying to Gideon, you haven't defeated these kings yet. They're not in your hand. How do we know that you're going to be able to be successful? They were doubting very seriously that Gideon was going to be able to do what he was planning to do. Matter of fact, they were probably afraid to help Gideon because they thought that these two kings might come back and punish them for helping Gideon after they had defeated Gideon. So they doubt Gideon's ability. They refuse to give him any help. So we see that Gideon and his men are turned away then from this city without even being given the loaves of bread. And Gideon said, "Therefore, when the Lord hath delivered Zeba and Zalmunna into mine hand, then will I tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars." So Gideon tells them what's going to happen. After I've gotten the victory, I don't have time now to do it. We're pursuing after these two kings. But after I've gotten the victory, then I'm going to come back and tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. Now, we don't know exactly how this was brought about, but we will see that Gideon did do what he said he was going to do. And here we find Gideon not only in the position of a general and leader of the army and deliverer of the people, but also he is now functioning in the position of a judge. And he's placed a judgment upon this city of Succoth for refusing to give him any help. Verse 8, "And he went up thence to Penuel." Now, Penuel is another city of fair size, still in the tribe of Gad, not too far from Succoth, a little bit to the south east of Succoth, "and spake unto them likewise." That is, he asked the men of Penuel also for help. He asked them also for bread. "And the men of Penuel answered him as the men of Succoth had answered him. They also refused to help him." So we have two cities now that turn him down when he asked for bread for his men. So they answered him the same way that the men of Succoth did. Verse 9, "And he spake also to the men of Penuel, saying, When I come again in peace, I will break down this tower." Now, no doubt they had a tower there that they were very pleased with, a tower that they were putting a lot of their confidence in. They might have even suggested to Gideon to take refuge in the tower and stop pursuing after that Midianite army. So he says, "When I come back, I'm going to break down your tower." Now, it makes us wonder about these two cities of Succoth and Penuel. Were these true Israelites? Were these people faithful to God? Surely they must have still been Baal worshipers. They must have still been in a position to not trust in the true and living God. They might have even been sympathetic with the Midianites. It's hard to say, because they certainly did not do the will of God here. And this tower that they had at Penuel could very likely have been a tower to the worship of an idol, because idolaters are notoriously tower builders and tower worshipers. And as we remember, the very first city that was built and was given to idolatry, Babylon and Babel erected this tower. They were tower builders, and idolaters ever since have been tower builders and tower worshipers. And so he says, "I will break down this tower." Verse 10, "Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor, and their host with them about 15,000 men, all that were left of all the host of the children of the east, for there fell 120,000 men that drew the sword." So this verse explains to us that they really had 135,000 men to start with, but in the initial encounter with Gideon and his 300 men, in the great confusion that was created there, they had slain each other with the sword, and 120,000 men had fallen on that occasion, so now there's only 15,000 left of all the host of the children of the east. All that were over there in the land of Canaan, only 15,000 were now left. All we know about this place called Karkar here is that it is some unidentified place east of the Jordan River where these two kings of the Midianites were conquered by Gideon. Verse 11, and Gideon went up by the way of them that dwelt in tents on the east of Noba and Jogbehah, and smote the host, for the host was secure. So Gideon left the large cities of Succoth and Penuel, and he went by the way of tents. That is, he went out in the country area to get to this place where these two kings were. And he smote the host. Now, it seemed that they used other weapons now besides their trumpets and their lamps, because they did smite the host, for the host was secure. That is, this remaining army of the Midianites was in a secure position. And, of course, at the very time when man thinks he is most secure, at the very time when he thinks he's done all the things necessary to bolster himself up so that he has a secure place, that's the very time when he's ready to fall, because we can only stand if we are true children of God. Otherwise, we have no strength at all so far as being able to succor and secure ourselves. So as secure as they were no match for Gideon and his 300 men. They smote the host. Verse 12, and when Zebah and Zalmunna fled, he pursued after them and took the two kings of Midian, Zebah and Zalmunna, and discomfited all the host. So they conquered the remainder of this army. They took the two leaders, this Zebah and Zalmunna, and they were very successful in the victory. And Gideon the son of Joash returned from battle before the sun was up. So this happened all in one night, apparently. They got back before the sun was up. And caught a young man of the men of Succoth and inquired of him. And he described unto him the princes of Succoth and the elders thereof, even 70 men. So on the way back, now they were going to punish these two cities for having turned them down and not giving them bread when they wanted it. These two cities for having gone against what God would have had them to have done, to just given common hospitality. But he caught this young man who knew about the situation of Succoth. He no doubt was a citizen of Succoth. And they asked him some questions. They got some intelligence about the city of Succoth. And so the man described unto them, him, the princes of Succoth, and the elders. He said, there are 70 men, which would be 77 men there that are the princes and elders of the city. They're the main ones. So they found out something about the city before they got back. And we can see then that he is now going to continue to act in this position of judge as he passes judgment on these cities. Verse 15, and he came unto the men of Succoth and said, behold, Zebah and Zalmunna, with whom you did upbraid me, saying, are the hands of Zebah and Zalmunna now in thine hand, that we should give bread unto thy men that are weary? So he brought these two Midianite kings with him. And he says, look, behold these two kings here. These are the ones that you did upbraid me about. These are the ones that you chided me about. These are the ones that you ridiculed my army about. And you ask if they were now in our hand, and only if they were in our hand would you give us any help. Here they are. Look at them. We have them. We've conquered them. This is proof that you were wrong. This is proof that God is with us. And this is proof that you should have given us help when you failed to do so. You would not give us bread unto the men who were weary. Verse 16, and he took the elders of the city and thorns of the wilderness and briars, and with them he taught the men of Succoth. Now we do not know exactly what Gideon did, but he took thorns of the wilderness and briars, and somehow or other he punished, he chastised the men of Succoth. He probably scourged them with this. He did something to tear the flesh, for he says in verse 7, then will I tear your flesh with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars. So he gave them some kind of a punishment. It just sounded like he took these briars and thorns and gave them a whipping with it. It's what it sounds like. But he says that he taught the men of Succoth. That is, his main purpose here was to educate them, to teach them a lesson, to teach them something about faithful and true service to their fellow brethren, to teach them that they should not have turned him away when they did. And so they learned a hard lesson here. And many times it's with the briars and the thorns that God has to use upon us that we are taught when we're so stubborn, when we're so obstinate that we will not hear and will not yield to the will of God, then we have to be taught. And that's what happened here. Verse 17, and he beat down the tower of Penuel and slew the men of the city. So when he got to Penuel to give them their judgment and their punishment, he tore this tower down, this thing that they probably used as an object of worship somehow, or at least an object of security for themselves. He tore it down and slew the men of the city. Now, it doesn't mean that he killed everybody in the city, but no doubt the prominent ones were put to death. So Gideon not only was the judge here, but he also was the executioner. He carried out the sentence that he had placed upon these two cities, and he did it in a very thorough and effective manner. He taught them. They no doubt knew now who Gideon was. They knew that God was with him. They knew that he had power, and that he had the victory given to him simply because he was a man of God. And no doubt they would have to think twice before they would again turn away this man or any man like him who was doing the will of God. Now, these things are all given as lessons for us today. Let us today not be on the side of the Midianites. Let us not trust in unsure things for our security. Let us turn to the things of God. Let us assist the people of God. And let us be 100% behind then the battles that are fought in the cause of God and His people. But we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friend.